Stripe helps many of the world's most influential companies grow their revenue and build a more profitable business. Whether it's Hertz making checkout a smooth ride for their customers, OpenAI answering unprecedented demand, or PGA chipping away at back office inefficiency, Stripe's financial infrastructure platform helps companies achieve ambitious goals. No matter what success looks like for your business, Stripe helps ensure the complexity of financial systems doesn't get in your way. Learn more at stripe.com.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now it's time for our Friday Forum, and I'm joined by Fianna Fáil Senator Timmy Dooley, by Sinn Féin TD Rose Conway Walsh, and by Labour Party Senator Murray Sherlock. Good morning and welcome to you all. The price of the pint. Who is exercised about Heineken going to put maybe up to 30 cent at the bar on the price of your pint? Murray?
Well, there'll be a lot of publicans, obviously, very annoyed. And I suppose, look, there is a bigger challenge here about how we actually ensure that we have a healthy nightlife economy, that people aren't necessarily, you know, like we're seeing, a trend over recent years in terms of people purchasing alcohol from off licences, and publicans, I suppose, hitting back and trying to ensure that we have, I suppose, a healthy nightlife. So I suppose, these price increases are what we're seeing right across the economy at the moment. I know they're grabbing our attention today in the newspapers, but I suppose, this side of Christmas as well, the timing couldn't be worse.
I mean, I'm not sure which cohort it's going to affect most. I mean, the quiet person who likes going to the pub and have a couple of pints, and that, you know, might mean they stay at home for one of the nights when they might have gone out. But for the younger cohort, as someone said earlier on the programme, 35 cent extra on a pint, and you have 4 pints, so it's 140 extra on your night out, you know.
Can be the difference between being able to get the bus home or not, you know. But I think it's just, it speaks, as Marie was saying, to them, the whole thing up. You'd wonder about how much of this is price gouging and how much of it is actual inflation. And I think that people are absolutely, you know, supply chains prices have increased. But then on top of that, like, I was really concerned during the week. This concerned me more than the pint, actually, in terms of home insurance. I'm getting through emails and letters from people who had 460 euro, say, last year for home insurance, and it's gone up to over 1,000 this year. Yeah. Now, I don't think, even with construction inflation, I don't think there's justification for that. So I think there needs to be a proper interrogation of this, and the consumer protection rights and all this need to get involved in terms of trying to protect people. Yeah. People just don't have the money.
I mean, I recently insured my home, and there was a small increase, but that was based on insuring me against being hacked. Believe it or not, you know, because there can be these ransomware. Yeah. But that was the only increase, and it was fairly minor. So I don't know who's suffering these draconian increases in house insurance.
Well, one man I spoke to yesterday, and like, he's just recovering from leukemia, and he got this big bill in for over 1,000 euro. And I just think that that is, like, he was distraught on the phone. How am I going to cover this?
Yeah.
And it's just not acceptable.
Shop around is probably the right answer, because he's clearly being overcharged.
But I think they need to be brought in before the Finance Committee as well. And that's what I'd be suggesting,
Timmy?
Over the week.
Yeah, I suppose, look, it's probably not going to stop anyone drinking a couple of pints. You'd have to drink 20 pints under the new price to save the price or to cost you another pint. So it's that's not really the issue, I suppose, but it's symptomatic of what's going on right across society.
Do you think people are being opportunistic sometimes in raising their prices?
They do. There's no doubt. I'm sure Heineken will challenge, say, the cost of energy, etc. And that is a real problem. The reality is energy prices will stabilise at some point. I doubt the prices will ever go back.
See, so we're going to be struck like with this butter, inflation. Timmy. You hear the restaurateurs saying, we used to pay so much for a box of butter and now it's three times the price. And I'm thinking, where is that increase coming from? Okay, the milking parlour, they might have, you know, more energy costs in milk on the cows, but and maybe the truck going to pick up the milk is using more expensive diesel, but it doesn't amount to kind of tripling the price.
No, it doesn't on the dairy products, although we've seen massive increases in both beef and dairy in the agri sector, and that's a supply and demand issue actually on the world markets. But I think government in concert with large business are going to have to find methodologies of stabilising this continuous cycle of upward pricing, because that's driving the inflation. And of course, there's a knock on a lot of talk about energy and the impact from the Ukrainian war.
Clearly, energy costs more because the brewing industry literally boils the stuff up to make the pints. They say raw material costs, but also packaging costs. But they put up the price of the draft products. Now, the only packaging there, as far as I can see, are the kegs, which are recycled. So where's the logic there?
There doesn't seem to be.
There may be an effort by some to regain or recoup some of the significant losses during the pandemic. Yeah. I don't know, but there may be some element of it stashed in there.
Yeah, and I think, look, ultimately, you know, the hospitality sector has, you know, is getting a lot of bad press at the moment because of the price gouging that is going on by some, obviously not all in the sector. And this kind of is another, feature now in terms of, like, isn't the price of a pint going up? And I suppose ultimately, we need to see between government and all those in hospitality coming out and actually outlining what is, you know, like, is it, what are the cost pressures here and what's happening with regards to profit margins? Because I think the thing is, ultimately, you know, it's just going to reinforce that notion. It's too expensive to go away to go out.
It's not going to the pubs. It's going to the original maker. And I'm really concerned about the number of retailers and pubs who are either hibernating for the winter or closing down permanently. And the impact that that's going to have, particularly in rural Ireland, where you say isolation, someone comes out for a few pints, suddenly you'll have pubs and shops that aren't there anymore, and they certainly aren't there through the winter months.
In the hospitality sector, where I thought the biggest pressure was coming on was the difficulty in finding people to work in hospitality, because very few people can afford to work in the way they could at lower rates, even at the minimum wage. Many of the hospitality owners are unable to get staff. So that's the biggest pressure. They're probably going to have to pay staff a little bit more, which is going to further put up the price of what they sell, which will eventually exclude people. It's a kind of a drip effect here that people just realise it's just too expensive now to eat out or to go for your couple of pints.
The funny thing is, if you were to ask a random bunch of people on the street, how much does a pint cost? A bit like asking people what's the price of a litre of milk. Yeah. Not many people actually know these days exactly what the appropriate price is of these commodities.
And it varies between city centre. Really, if you rock into the Temple Bar, a pint is an awful lot more than it will be in a suburb or down the country.
Yeah, centre of town in Dublin could be up to €7 for a pint at a bar, and maybe more if it's a late night nightclub. In Castlebar, Catherine McNamee, our sports person this morning, said it's less than a fiver.
It is, I'd say, that'll be the case in Clare as well.
Castlebar is the place to go, obviously, for a pint.
But the cost of diesel getting there.
Well, that's it as well. But, you know, it does speak into, and we'll probably talk about energy and energy prices and in terms of how, electricity is priced, the decoupling of gas with electricity. One thing feeds into another. Mm. What I'm really concerned about as well is that how embedded inflation is becoming and the dangers of that. Next year, the year after, and the year after that, like
it's just the spiraling. It's just this in isolation wouldn't be as big a problem, but it will add to the notion, as I said earlier, that the whole cost of hospitality now is just too much. And hotel prices in this city, I think we spoke about this before, Pat. We see some hotels having a reasonable price increase that they've had to cover. And then we've seen others at the high point in the season when demand is high, charging enormous prices for their couple of last rooms, which then, like, if you ring up a hotel and you can't get a room, you'll accept it. But if you ring up and you say, oh, we've 3 rooms left, and it's 500 or 450 for the night, you really leave with a bad opinion, yeah, a really bad impression. And I think we've got to do more work on that.
Some of the texts coming in. Price of gas and diesel has skyrocketed. Malt for Heineken is made in kilns powered by gas. And then everything is transported by road on diesel trucks. Rising costs are the reason that these prices are going up. Another one says, how many pubs will put 20 or 30 cent on all the pints, whether they're made by Diageo or made by Heineken, who've announced the increase. The only thing I would say about all of this, and I'm enjoying some of the headline writing this morning, which is quite creative. I would remember as a child, a young child, and my father saying that if the price of the pint went up to half a crown, he would stop drinking. Now it did, and well beyond, and he didn't stop drinking, but that would be the equivalent, yeah, of 10 cent or thereabouts, yeah, today. Mm. Yeah. So the pint has inexorably gone up over the decades, and so it will continue.
Yeah.
I think that's the reality.
I think that's fair, and it used to be said the same with cigarettes, you know, yeah, yet that has continued to be, yeah,
although
heavily
there is, yeah, some impact,
there
on,
is,
on the
there
fags
is,
by,
well,
the prices.
It may be more social, so more, less socially acceptable now to, yeah, smoke, I think, because of the bans that
but
came in, etc.
But there's a pricing elasticity there is, that, yeah, you may not get in other products in cigarettes, yeah, and I think when people, the more that they went up, which is a good thing in that sense.
But
that
if you think of a pack of cigarettes, what does it cost now? Is it 20 euro? Is it a euro a fag?
Yes,
and you just kind of keep your appetite in train for or in check for maybe 2 hours, and you've saved a euro because you've skipped a cigarette.
Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah. And you have enough to drink.
Lifestyle advice from Pat there this morning.
And they're talking about, I think it was Peter Burke this morning, saying that we should ban the sale of cigarettes and vaping equipment to those who are under 21. And I just thought that was a daft idea because you can get married, can drink.
Prohibition has never worked on any of those.
Okay, another quick question for you all.
Yeah.
The Christmas lights. The OPW acting to tell RT to switch them off at certain times, and the GPO and Leinster House and all the rest of it. What do you think, Timmy?
It's a good headline, I think, at a time when we're discussing an energy crisis, when we're discussing climate change at COP. Will it have any meaningful effect? Maybe it sends out a message to people to be a little bit more cautious, turn off lights when they don't need to be on. I think we all try to do that around our homes. Our kids don't necessarily follow the direction. I think many houses still look like Christmas trees most of the time with lights on unnecessarily. Look, I think it helps to feed into a public debate that we've got to be more conscious from a climate change perspective, just as much as an energy saving message. And if by targeting some of those iconic buildings, it's getting traction, we're talking about it. So it has to be a good thing.
Okay. I think it is. But I think that the OPW need to go in, and you know this, Timmy, yeah, and Marie, go into Leinster House and have a situation where each office can actually turn down the heat, because you often have regularly have situations.
You have no control,
there.
Have you not?
Wait, no, you don't. In the office, so you have to open the window because it's when the heat goes on. And I've seen this in many other public buildings. So it's not just the lights on the outside.
There used to be,
they
1st of October,
the, right,
the heat, yeah, went on, and 1st of May.
Same with
it
airports
went
and all big public buildings.
Down.
But I think at the moment, there are some buildings where it's colder, yeah, inside than it is out, with, yeah, such,
Marie,
a change in the weather.
Well, look, listen, Christmas lights are a hugely important part of Christmas and the celebration of Christmas. It's daft if any lights are on 24 hours a day. Like, in fairness, I think up beyond 9 o'clock at night, you know, the Christmas lights are 10 o'clock at night. The lights don't need to be on.
Okay, so we should rename the OPW the OPG, the Office of Public Grinch.
Well, they need to fix a lot of things.
As Rose said, there's a systematic assessment needed of all public buildings in terms of their energy use. Yeah. You know, because
and
they're
the
not
light,
the
by the way, is the least of it, because a lot of them are very energy efficient. Now, we want to get on to more serious matters. And you know that there's kind of positive noises coming out of Rishi Sunak and Micheál Martin when they met yesterday, and, you know, what to do about the protocol. Disturbing stuff, though. Rishi Sunak saying how deeply it's affecting a lot of people in terms of the way they live in Northern Ireland. It's rubbish. If he doesn't understand that basic point, that this is a political issue for the DUP, it's not about practical living at all for people in Northern Ireland, then we've no hope.
Yeah.
Timmy?
Yeah, I think you've characterised it really well. And again, he may be, I don't want to try to second guess what Rishi Sunak is doing. But I suspect he's trying to give some comfort to the DUP, as Boris Johnson did on many occasions, and then did the complete opposite when it came to his time in London. I mean, we do need to see things move. I mean, there hasn't been an assembly in operation for many months now. We do need to get back working, and parties do need to get back working for the people in the north of Ireland. And hopefully, Rishi Sunak can bring some fresh thinking to it. He may have to say what some want him or want to hear from him in order to build that confidence.
I wonder.
Well, you'd have to hope. I think there is a window of opportunity here, you know, but he needs to face down the DUP. As you said, all the evidence coming through from businesses, we had this during the week, even in terms of the EU Affairs Committee, all the evidence from business is that, yes, there are a few things that need to be fixed. Something is not to undermine those things, but they can be fixed at the joint committee. Like, you have to remember that, going back to the paper that the EU supplied last October, it was completely ignored by the British government, but those institutions have to get up and running.
Will docking pay soften their cough?
Well, it's the DUP. Like, it is one party, and I think they need to be called out for this. And I honestly believe, and I don't think many people believe, it has nothing to do with the protocol. It's more to do that Michelle O'Neill is the first minister designate, and they can't bear
that. So
you
have to bring them a journey. I don't think talking down to them or calling them out, whilst that you would want it from a frustration point of view. But I think if we've learned anything from the Good Friday Agreement, that, you know, you bring people with you, and it is frustrating, I'm sure, for the people that are at it on the ground to try to have to continue to appease the DUP.
In his remarks, he did talk about the concerns of people in Northern Ireland that the ties that bind them to the union were being weakened. That was part of his. So maybe he is a little more politically sophisticated than.
I think there's a lot of messages being delivered somewhat in silos to different people. And, you know, look at, we've seen that happen in the past. So.
Okay. Now, there's an extraordinary story that the UK wants EU visitors to give face and finger biometrics. Now, Irish citizens will be exempt in going into the United Kingdom. But anyone coming, say, from the Republic of Ireland into Northern Ireland, who is not an Irish person, is going to have to give biometrics at the border. Now, what kind of lunacy is that, Marie?
Well, it's another example of the racist immigration policy being put forward by the British government. I think it's important to say that, you know, a number of months ago we saw the proposal to ship all asylum seekers to Rwanda. That's still stuck in the courts and hasn't gone anywhere. This proposal to have biometric finger and face recognition, you know, effectively would amount to having, you know, they would need to have, you know, if it was to be done properly, they'd need to have border checks along the border. And it's absolutely crazy. And look, I think the thing is, we have a lot of fanciful thinking and proposals coming out from Britain now with regards to immigration policy that, at you know, in essence, is racist and needs to be called out. And I don't know how far they're going to get with that proposal.
No, I'm just thinking of the practicalities. You'd like to think that politicians actually sometimes know what they're talking about. And quite clearly, this fellow, Jenrick, does not. He hasn't a clue. He's obviously never been to the Irish border. He doesn't know how many crossings there are, how porous it is, how well it has worked when we were all in the
league. They're playing to that nationalistic streak that's developing across Europe. We see the same after the Swedish elections. We see it a little bit in Italy. And I think we've seen it in Britain for a long time. I think that was one of the, probably one of the strong tenets behind Brexit, was this notion that there's mass immigration into the UK and that that's disturbing and distorting their economic activity. Quite frankly, it's the opposite. When I talk to businesses in the UK now, they're saying we've lost migrant workers, which were a fundamental tenet of, whether it's in the transportation or whatever sectors. So as a result of their rather bizarre decision to leave the union, they have cut off their nose to spite their face in terms of not having access to a flow of employees.
Just read kind of the full text of what he's saying. Irish citizens will not be required to obtain an ETA, this is the electronic travel authorization. All other non-British and non-Irish nationals arriving in the UK, including those crossing the land border into Northern Ireland, need to enter in line with the UK's immigration framework. This will include the requirement to obtain an ETA when it's introduced. However, as now, the UK will not operate routine immigration controls on journeys from within the common travel area, with no immigration controls whatsoever on the Ireland, Northern Ireland land border. The UK is currently working with Ireland to consider whether there's scope for a workable UK-Ireland data sharing solution to determine whether a person is a lawful resident of Ireland and so could potentially be exempt from the ETA requirement to travel into the UK.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely unworkable as well as being unacceptable. But if you think in terms of tourists going north and south, students, but also people who go back and over, and we're going to ask kids to, you know, who are going to school the other side, in, you know, north or south, to bring their passports to school with them. How are you going to know that somebody is Irish without looking at their passport?
And the other thing is, like, they talk there about working with the Irish government. The Irish government, I think, needs to send a very clear message that this is cuckoo stuff, cuckoo land stuff.
Some of the texts coming in. I live in Churchtown in Dublin. Almost any pint is €7 and the pizza in my local is €18, which is expensive for a pizza. There's an oversupply of pubs in Ireland, which adds to the problem. Not enough drinkers to make them all viable. So says Frank. Pubs have gone very quiet these days and the cost of a pint is creeping past €6, closer to €7. Are the days of pubs numbered? Asked Kieran in Malahide. Now, pay-related social insurance and the idea that if you're made redundant and you are a job seeker, you get more money if you've paid, if you've been paid more and therefore paid more into the PRSI fund. Rose.
Well, that's the case in many other countries, and I certainly would welcome it being examined. It needs to be examined further into what the implications would be. But obviously, if somebody loses their job and they have demands built up and all that, they have to be able to live. There's nothing to be gained by plunging people into poverty. You know, hopefully those
people
would get...
What about the argument, you know, everyone should get the same dole, the same way as they get the same child benefit?
Well, hopefully those people would get jobs quicker again. Yeah. I mean, we know that if people are long-term unemployed, there are more challenges there for them to get back into the workforce again, and more supports need to be put in there and more initiatives there. But I do think it's something that we should seriously examine.
Yeah, like, you know, absolutely this needs to happen. And as Rose says, Ireland is out of kilter. Like, ultimately, you can see the social welfare system as penalising people for not having a job, or actually helping people to try and find a job and get out of that unemployment situation. And that's why it's so important that we have some link between previous earnings and unemployment. And, like, you know, it's not just about losing a job. It's also if somebody goes on to short term working hours. So, you know, we're going to see across quite a number of manufacturing companies this winter and into the spring, because of the fuel costs and everything else, companies having to scale back production. They're going to put workers on short term hours. Those workers, for the days that they're not working, will be reliant on social welfare, and they're going to see a massive cliff, you know, on their earnings. And when you think of mortgage payments and all the other cost of living, we have to help people through those rough times.
Look, I think we've already seen it in action. We saw it during the pandemic. I think there were five different levels of supports that were given to people based on what they were earning prior to the state effectively closing down their opportunities or their businesses. And I think that has given the government a confidence that this works, and that you don't put people into penury. Like, there was a time where people were able to save for the rainy day. So many people now are living month to month, and whilst they might be on a good salary, they're paying for their kids in school or college, they've commitments on their mortgage, they're paying their cars. One time you didn't finance a car, you waited until you could afford.
I was making the point during the week that if you're on the average industrial wage, which is close enough to 50 grand now, that's a grand a week, say, round figures. If this new payment is 350 max, you're still going to be rushing back if you can to a job, aren't you? Because the difference between 1,000 and 350 is still an enormous gulf. So it's not exactly replacing everything you've lost.
Not at all. No. But it's smoothening. It's taking away some of the stress. You're still, you know, people will be under enormous pressure anyway if they're on 1,000 and they're dropping even to 500, quite frankly, would be a very significant drop for somebody.
And I think the thing is, we have yet to see from government specifically what they are proposing here as well in terms of that link with earnings. I think the other important point to say is that, you know, those reliant on social welfare payments in the past budget, you know, did not get increases, you know, in line with the increase in cost of living. So they're already suffering a reduction in the money that they need to actually afford the, you know, the everyday things today. So, you know, so I think there, you know, it's important to have the link with earnings, but also we need to look at the basic social welfare rates that are there in place at the moment and improve those as well. That's really important.
Finally, and we should talk about the job losses very briefly. But I'm hearing a lot of reportage, which is almost like talking ourselves into a tech winter. And it ain't so. I mean, what's happening is we're only going down to the rates of employment in those companies that they had a year ago.
Yeah, and it's...
But
it's,
I think there's a couple of major things here. And I suppose the first thing it speaks to is economic diversification, that once and for all, we really have to do this properly in terms of the over-reliance we have on FDI, but also in terms of the unions and not having collective bargaining
within those. But like, we've 2.5 million people at work in Ireland. It's only about 10% of that are working in FDI. And the reality is, in the tech side, is only about a third of that. So, and we've a very diverse economy even within the foreign investment. I mean, we've a lot of pharma, we've finance, we've agri, we have biomed.
I think all of we're the very diversified.
So I'm just talking about talking ourselves into a problem that may not be real.
Yeah, but I suppose the important point here is that it's a massive impact on our GDP in the country, on our tax revenues in the country. And I think the important thing as well from an employment perspective is that we've seen outrageous behaviour by, you know, tech employers over the past 7 days that are riding roughshod over labour laws in this country.
Yeah. But then, in fairness, manners, I think, have been put on
not necessarily. Like, there's people who have been effectively locked out of their emails, locked out of internal systems. And in my book, that amounts to constructive dismissal. Yeah, yeah. You know, now, and they haven't been properly called out yet, you know.
We have to leave it there. A reminder that our items from today are uploaded as a podcast, which you can listen to on the Newstalk app, powered by Go Loud. My thanks to Timmy Dooley, to Rose Conway Walsh, and to Marie Sherlock.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on Newstalk.